Accession number 18220, Dame Marion Kittlewell, Reel 1, followed after a pause by Reel 2. Left channel contains informant's microphone only, right channel informant and interviewer.
So if I could ask you, first of all, to tell me something about your background. This would be before the war, of course, where you were born and brought up.
Yeah, well, I'm one of a family of four. I have
three brothers.
I was born in Strawberry Hill, but after the First World War, my father had a breakdown, and we moved to Devon
for a year.
And then we moved back to Surrey, and he went back to his work as a civil engineer. And we lived in a big house with about 10 acres of ground outside Higham, below Holloway College. And we had a very nice free life, and I went to a kindergarten at what is now Great Foster's Hotel. The Montagues employed a PNEU governess, and my youngest brother went and shared her with about eight other children. So from there, I went to the weekly boarders to St. Stephen's Clure, which I was quite happy, but it was a school that had an enormous number of regulations, and I was always getting these black marks of talking in the passage or something like that. Then my parents said, well, you can go to Cheltenham or you can go to Godolphin, Salisbury. And I chose Godolphin because it was a smaller school. And I was very happy there. I spent 4 years there. Lovely staff. And I think they go ahead for that time. I mean, if we were four, we could go walk anywhere we liked, or we could go to any church we liked on Sunday. And as I say, the staff were very positive, and their outlook was not just that you should get to Oxbridge, but whatever talents or gifts they saw in you, that was the fulfilling of that that mattered. I don't think they spelled it out, but that was what the message of God. And no written rules, so I was very, very happy now. And when I was 16, I was in a geography class doing, I suppose, Canada working for O levels as they are now. And the map of the Rockies was before me, and I said to myself, I am going there. And I also wanted to do youth work. And when I left Godolphin, I went to St. Christopher's Blackheath, which was a Church of England training college. Specialised more on the teaching side. I'd rather hope to do more club work, but that came into it a little bit. And when I got through that, in a way, I quite enjoyed that, but it was rather like a continuation of school. We weren't treated more as adults. I went to the fellowship of Maple Leaf, who sent people to Canada. And they said, oh, well, we don't want you till 24. So that was a bitter blow, and I went to look for parish work. But people wanted people with experience. And then Maple Leaf, who had previously sent teachers to Canada, and now Canada was sending its own teachers, so they sent youth workers to work in isolated rural parishes. And they said, we'll take you at 21, but you won't be allowed to preach. And I thought that was wonderful. We were having both ends of the... And so I went out, and there were three others from the college, actually a bit older than I was, who were going out to other places, and we all went in a liner to Montreal, and then in the train right across to Edmonton, and we were met there, and then I went first to a place called Onaway, which was about 40 miles out of Edmonton. We had a car there. We also had a horse and a sleigh, and I had to learn to harness the horse, and I was there about a year before they sent me to a logging camp south of Pencil. But unfortunately, I was only there about 6 weeks because a Canadian girl was working at another place with an elderly English woman, and they didn't get on. So I was sent to take her place, and this was up at Ashmont, right about 200 miles northeast of Edmonton. And we lived in a wooden bungalow that had been the vicarage, and we had a wooden church, and we had two horses, and normally we rode them, but if we had to take the harmonium for a service, or we took the sleigh or the buggy according to the season. And up there I did scouts and guides and cubs and brownies. I wasn't in charge of them all, but I helped the leaders and helped train the leaders. And I went on a wonderful cub training base, which was run by the Alberta Cubs and Scouts at Sylvan Lake. And Sunday schools, and very often one rode out to a school, perhaps 15 miles, and took religious education, and then followed up with a mixture of Cubs and Scouts, or whatever the age group or the sex, and did it all in one.
Was it mainly a religiously based fellowship?
Church of England, the Anglican Church.
Yes. Who had set it up? Did you know anything about the origins of the fellowship?
It started in Victorian days, and they sent out teachers, and then Canada trained its own teachers, and the money was there, and so they were short of clergy and people to run the parishes. We only had a churchman about every 3 months, or he'd come up to take a wedding, especially, or something like that.
Who were the people you were helping, the children? Could you tell me something about them?
Well, they were a splendid mixture. As quite a lot of the British ones had gone out after the First World War, when I think they were allowed a certain area of land, which they had to clear, and under very severe conditions. I knew one lovely lady from a mill in Yorkshire who had gone out because her fiancé had been gassed in the war and had to live an open air life. And she lived in a tent with two children while they were building their house all through the winters, and about 9 miles from the nearest store, so she hardly ever saw anybody else. And then there were other people. There was an old Harrovian, there was a cook from the House of Commons, and then there were, of course, other nationalities, particularly from Eastern Europe, Ukrainians. And one of the things I didn't realise at the time, but I appreciate it now, that, of course, there was no other attraction to the children, and no television, and very little radio, and they lived out on farms, and they would come miles, either walking or horseback or dogs team, to come to anything you organised, really. And when you went to camp, which I arranged. I hadn't done much camping, but the scout sent up a young man to help me from Edmonton. And a lot of the farms were poor, so to get all your food you had to go around and see what had been doing well, whether they'd had a good potato crop, or whether the cow was in calf, could they send some butter, and would they perhaps bake so much bread, and that way you, by what was available, you created your menu. And then one farmer drove us all out in a van, and the family brought the cow as their contribution, so that we had milk on the spot. Mm-hmm. We camped by a lake for nearly 2 weeks, and after that was a great experience. I enjoyed it. It wasn't a great strain.
Is that so? Did you adapt quite easily? Because it must have been very different, you know, to anything you'd experienced earlier.
Well, it was very different because, for instance, when you put up a tent, you have to first chop your pole down from the bush and get it the right length. But I think, encouraged by my father, we were all brought up to be very practical. I don't think it's all that difficult. But anyhow, when you're in your early 20s, it doesn't seem quite so as it would now.
So how long were you there altogether?
I was in Canada for 3 years. And of course, this was not a paid job. You've got all your travelling expenses and your board and food, but my parents allowed me £50 a year, which doesn't seem very much now, but that met my needs, and I was also able to go up to Saskatchewan, where I had an aunt and some first cousins, and I got down to British Columbia, and I got to Jasper twice for my summer holiday. We only had a summer holiday.
Did you have any thoughts of, you know, remaining in Canada at any time?
Oh yes, I was quite confident I would go back. I did my 3 years, and then you have leave at the end of that. When I got back, it was before the end of 38, and it was a very cold winter, and I was even colder at home than I had been in Canada with 40 below. But the 30s were a very difficult time for people in business, and my father went bankrupt at that time, and my mother was arthritic, and so the Irish maple leaf allowed me to stay on a bit longer so that I could help them sell the house and move into one that was more convenient. And I was due to go back to Canada at the end of September 39. And when war was declared, I said, I think I won't go back. It seemed wrong somehow to be going to avoid to go out of England. And also, Canada were beginning also to train their own youth workers. And I did see, I think, that there wouldn't always be a space over there, but there would have been for the next 3 or 6 years. But of course, after the war, my own living.
Do you remember the actual outbreak of war, you know, the day it happened?
Oh yes, because my parents, who would have had about 30 evacuees in their old home, had to have three, and they arrived. And of course, one heard the first alarm, that air raid alarm that went off. thought something was going to happen, but it wouldn't. And,
did you have any thoughts that you yourself might be involved, you know, in the services or war work? You know, I wondered what you thought at the time.
I think the idea was immediately to do something. I went down to the local office with my parents, had a small car, and the council offices, and the lady behind the counter was a mutual friend and knew what I had been doing. I thought I would just pay evacuees from the station too, but she said, oh, well, a party of Jewish expectant mothers has got off the train at the wrong place, and they have about 12 children with them, young, and we put them into an empty house on Englefield Green, and you go and look after them. But that was quite an experience. And I had a young German, Frau Fräulein, who I think had escaped from Germany, had Jewish blood. She'd never scrubbed the floor in her life or done any cooking, but she was very willing. And of course the Jewish ladies, because they were expecting, weren't supposed to do much cooking, or they weren't very willing. Never mind. We got on quite well, and I did that until they went to their maternity homes, and then they were going to move somewhere else after that, somewhere better planned. And the nursery took it over, this house, and I ran the nursery, the classroom side, all of the games and the blackboards and all that sort of thing. The matron in charge was very old-fashioned, and if the children had an accident or anything, she'd put them in the corner with their pants down, and it was something I couldn't be doing with. So I thought, I will join up, and I went around and I looked at the army and the RAF and the navy, and I wanted to be an MT driver. I wanted a complete change from this nursery and the matron who I really didn't think what to look after children. And the man said, oh well, we don't really want MT drivers at the moment, we'll have to wait about 6 months. And I said, well, yes, I'll go and do a course on engines or something. But to my great surprise, they rang up next day and they said, you can drive in London. So I said, yes. Would you come tomorrow and drive for Flag Officer Submarines? I couldn't think what Flag Officer Submarines was doing in London, up at Swiss Cottage. But I reported to Broadhurst Gardens, where the Wren's quarters were. And it was quite a blitzed area, and several houses were down. And they gave me an armband. And I reported to the flag lieutenant, who said, bring the admiral's barge alongside the admiral's train ashore. And I must say, I did wonder what I was joining. I brought the box all round to the front door, and Admiral Sir Max Horton got on board, and I drove him down to the Admiralty. And my main job was driving, there were two drivers. Our main job was to the Admiralty or to the railway stations, and occasionally out to Bomber Command or Fighter Command with liaison between the operational officers.
Had you officially joined the Wrens at that time?
Well, you didn't sign on for 2 weeks, and most people went to new entry training, but I didn't. I missed all that. They didn't even give me a driving test. I still marvel that how it could be, but I suppose in those days you came in for a fortnight and you could leave if you didn't like it. And I think the girl who'd come to drive the Ferros submarines was not used to London and panicked and said she was going home and they needed somebody. That's how it all started.
So you started off driving an admiral?
Well, yes, or the commander, or the commander ops or something. The admiral did have his own car, but his own driver, civilian driver, that he had time off and he wasn't always there.
When you look back, I mean, you'd had no naval training, training. Did you know how to behave towards an admiral or senior officers? You know, were you given any instructions at all?
Absolutely no instruction. We weren't told that. In fact, there was another Wren in Broadhurst Gardens, who's Margaret Drummond, and she was director Wren's before me. And so we'd known each other ever since our first days of ratings. And we always agreed that we learnt what to do by what wasn't done, you know, in our life. The unit officer, we practically never saw the course officer, unless we'd done something wrong. But I mean, I know the unit officer took one rem and failed to salute her, hadn't been told her. And this girl came back and said, I've just been taught to salute in the middle of Swiss costume by the first officer. So you just picked it up. And you heard other people saying so or something to it.
So how long did that little period last for you?
Well, really quite a short time, because there were the two drivers and they were very conscientious about using the car and the petrol. We, the other very nice girl, we agreed we were underemployed in a sort of a rather high-handed manner that you have in that situation. We thought it could be better organised and one driver would be enough and they could use the Admiralty if they wanted an emergency at night. We got it all nicely worked out and we told the unit officer and she wasn't amused. And she said, all right, you haven't got enough to do, I'll have you drafted. So I went on draft to Windsor.
Before you tell me about your draft to Windsor, driving in London at this time, what stage of the war would that have been?
Well, it was early 1941.
And were there any raids at that time?
Yes, there were. We had to sleep down in a basement, about 20 of us in double bunks, very closely packed. And we could go up to our rooms if it was an all clear to get our clothes, and we had one small chest of drawers between four of us and one cupboard, and we were all in plain clothes at that time because the uniforms had been bombed at Deptford. It took about 2 months to get our uniforms.
I was wondering also, you know, driving in London, were there special problems?
That you expect now, so that you didn't have any hold-ups or traffic jams. But one thing you had to do in the morning was, when you first got there, before you were acquired, you had to drive around to find which routes were clear. Because, of course, there was no advice on the radio for security reasons to say whether you could go through the Mall or down Baker Street or whatever. One quite lively drive I had, the Admiral got in the car and said, get to the Admiralty as quick as you can and don't worry about any regulations. So I did about 80 through Regent's Park and gently down Baker Street across the lights, and he went in with the Commander Ops and into the Admiralty, and I sat outside. Then the Commander Ops came out after about an hour or so, and the Bismarck had been sunk. And that was, I found it very difficult to sober my driving down, but the next few days, but it was fun. Sometimes with the other driver, we let each other, we take a lift in the car and go to the one of the big hotels and have a sauna or a shower. And when we got our uniforms, we didn't like the hats, you know, which were those awful gabardine gather bonnets. And we went to some shop in Bond Street, where for about £1 you could get a beautiful navy blue felt hat. And the unit officer in London didn't seem, perhaps she never saw what we were wearing, I don't know. But when I got to Windsor, I was asked, what do you think you've got on your head, Kettlewell? And I had to go to the bottom of my kit bag, drag out my crumpled gabardine horror.
So at Windsor, what is this where you were sort of formally taken into the Wrens?
Well, no, after a fortnight in London, I'd signed on, and as I say, uniform didn't come for about 2 months because of the Blitz. I was in the Wrens then, and in Windsor, we lived in one of the Eton College houses. And I think one part of the school had been evacuated. And I drove a Tilly there. It was a defensively equipped merchant service pay office, and they did all the pay for naval ratings on board the ship.
So at Windsor, you were saying?
The offices were about 2 miles from Eton, where we were all living, and the front of the house was the naval officers' mess, and mostly warrant officers, and there was a commanderess, and a few lieutenant commanders. And we took them, our job was to take them out to the offices. And then go to the barracks, the army barracks, for provisions for the quarters, and occasionally up to London to collect stationery for all the forms they did. But it was pretty dull. It was also my home area because I'd been to school in, before I went to Gibraltar. I'd been to school in Windsor, and my home was only 8 miles away. So. I wasn't best pleased. I expected to go to a port and be very heavily employed. And we had it was a very friendly unit, and we used to bicycle around and go to places of historic interest and to pubs for quiet drink. We were only getting about 2 bob a day, so we didn't have a lot of money, but of course the money went.
Who were the people you were with in the Wrens at that time? You know, were you quite a mixed group, would you say?
Very mixed backgrounds. Although perhaps in Windsor, which was mostly because of the function of this, they were mostly writers, and there were no signals on radar plots or any of the I suppose there was not quite such a mixture there, but they came from all over the country, of course, and I'm still in touch with them. In fact, this Saturday there's a reunion from the Windsor over in the Union Jack. I think it's the last one we shall ever have. Laura Camadapti's niece was there. She was a writer in the sick berth. I've kept in touch with her ever since.
Were you given formal training at this time? You know, did you have drill, for instance, or any other training?
I could help it, but we did have We did slug drill on the Eton parade ground, mainly to because they had these war weapons weeks, and we had to march through Windsor. It's not the easiest place to march through, but it's up and down. And,
Amen.